This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
New York City taxi drivers caravan to Albany to protect full-time jobs against proposed pro-Uber and Lyft app-based company legislation, and why this is a critical issue for all workers. And we are going to be listening to some of the beautiful tune by Bob James, the theme from Taxi, by way of introduction of our guest. I actually think it's a good thing that Beta V Desai, in my mind, is always associated with the really beautiful jazz tune, the theme from Taxi by Bob James. And, you know, there was a huge traffic jam of taxi cabs that circled the Capitol in Albany to put the brakes on legislation sponsored by ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft, which allow people to pick up passengers in their own cars. Now, the legislation would require New York City to accept drop-offs by Uber and Lyft drivers with lower standards than licensed New York City taxi and for-hire vehicle drivers. And there would be no way to enforce regulations against these drivers from cruising throughout New York City picking up illegal fares. The Taxi Workers Alliance says the legislation would lead to unsafe, unregulated cars acting as taxis. Riders would lose all kinds of protection, safety, insurance, accessibility, and a fair price. And for taxi drivers, favorable legislation to these app-based companies poses the biggest threat to full-time work in this industry from companies who want part-time labor and are intent on saturating the streets with the app-based vehicles. And with that, I am delighted to have an old friend and a constant organizer of the Taxi Workers Alliance, Beta V Desai.
Thank you, Mimi.
Tell us about the legislation more specifically and what brought this jam of taxi cabs to circle the Capitol in Albany in opposition to it.
Basically, these Silicon Valley-based, you know, companies have been lobbying across the country, actually, and there are a few states like California where they're headquartered and Illinois where, you know, the mayor of Chicago, apparently his family has had interest in Uber in particular. So they've also managed to pass these laws in places like Illinois. So the law would carve out a special area in the state regulations for transportation network companies, TNCs. And as TNCs, the companies basically operate just like a taxi or for hire vehicle, but they're explicitly exempt from all the minimum state requirements for taxis and FHVs. That means local regulators cannot even require them to follow, you know, long-established service standards, like, for example, you know, security background checks on taxi drivers processed through the State Department of Criminal Justice Services. Instead, they privatize those background security checks. And as a result, there have been a rash of crimes committed by TNC operators across the country. In Houston, for example, where the city had denied a taxi license to an applicant, the same individual was granted to come on board by Uber and operate a TNC as an UberX vehicle. And 2.5 months after this individual had committed a rape of a female passenger, Uber kept him on the app. You know, so he was denied an application by the city. Uber kept him. Uber granted him a license. Then after a rape incident, kept him on that app. And I know just yesterday's story broke that in Virginia, a woman has filed a suit in alleging that she has filed several complaints against Uber and downrated the TNC driver for sexually harassing her minor daughter, who's like 13 years old. And, you know, Uber never took any action. And so these cases have unfortunately become really common. And so, again, what these companies are doing, though, is they're lobbying for state exemption from all these basic service standards in a service industry, from security background checks to a uniform insurance policy. So can you imagine, you know, if a TNC driver is in a collision, strikes another motorist or, you know, another vehicle or strikes a passerby on the street, the insurance that the umbrella insurance that the TNCs carry is only, it's only, it's active at one level if the app is on and there's a passenger in the back seat. It's active at a secondary level if the app is on but there's no passenger, you know, no fare's been accepted and no passenger yet. And there's no liability on that insurance policy whatsoever if the app is off. And, for example, you know, the driver has finished his shift and is on their way home. And, you know, I should say that at the heart of this model, again, is dispatching directly for hire to individuals, you know, private motorists, without any training, any security background checks, you know, any insurance, you know, full insurance requirements, using their personal vehicles. So they're, you know, they're private individuals using personal vehicles for hire. And these companies are looking to legalize this type of a service. And it's really unheard of in a transportation sector where you're driving people for hire. And imagine in New York City alone, we drive 1 million people every single day. And so I can't imagine that, you know, that these companies are lobbying so hard to gut away at the most basic consumer protections that have been regulated for the past 40 years in this industry.
You know, it seemed to me one of the other strategic things as I was really announcing this segment, the word precarity came to mind for me, which is a word that is really a dominant understanding that I have now about what is happening to the world of full-time work, which is the actuality of companies seeking to have people as casual labor, as rotational labor, as non-full-time labor, so that they can not pay the full-time benefits, health and otherwise, inhibit the process of organization, unionization, and so on. And I wonder if you see that and can address this. So here we have groups like the Taxi Workers Alliance, whose members seek full-time and are full-time workers with little enough benefits as there are, versus this part-time process, this casual labor employed in the Uber and Lyft type app-based companies. If you could talk about that.
Sure. I mean, absolutely, Mimi. That is part of their economic model. You know, they call it the gig economy, right? But we're not looking for short-term casual work. You know, we're looking for, you know, for generations, this has been a profession, full-time profession, you know, for tens and thousands of drivers. And that's all in under at risk of being completely undermined. I mean, across the country, according to Uber, and they seem to brag about this, 51% of Uber drivers are actually part-time workers. They drive only 5 to 10, maximum 15 hours a week. The majority are individuals who have another job working full-time but drive on the side, you know, to supplement that income. And the hours that they're working, meanwhile, are really the prime hours that full-timers are out there to earn the bulk of their income. You know, the other hours, you're really out there to earn back your expenses. And so, you know, this is so much about the vast unemployment and underemployment that's plagued our economy. And what these companies are doing is, they claim that it's job creation, but in reality, they're actually taking jobs away from tens and thousands of workers. And for the workers who they're bringing into this sector at part-time levels, you know, they're making on average like $10,000-$15,000 a year. So, and the drivers are not considered employees. I mean, the real platform of these technology companies is really, you know, longstanding worker exploitation in an industry that 30 years ago took a commission system where workers were employees and had, you know, basic protections and turned it into a present-day leasing system where all the costs are borne by the drivers. And so the companies are guaranteed a profit. The workers have no guarantee of even a minimum wage, even though they're laboring 60 hours a week. And so, these multi-billion dollar companies like Uber are really, you know, they came into this industry, one, because, you know, the existing economic model, you know, suited them, and, you know, the workers were already vulnerable. And so even in New York City, Slate magazine had reported that 41% of Uber drivers here are in fact part-time. And, you know, in this gig economy, with these apps, you know, their main claim is they are the fastest and the cheapest. To be the fastest and the cheapest, you have to flood the streets with vehicles. Anybody that knows this industry, the transportation, understands that. You know, to say that you're going to be the first car to pick up that passenger, you have to have many cars available on that street. And so, you know, no full-time driver, you know, will be able to earn a living when it's that many vehicles out there. You know, secondly, you know, to be the cheapest, you continue to undercut the cost. It's one of the reasons, Mimi, that they're looking to dispatch directly to private motorists, you know, to people who already have a vehicle. You know, and they want to carve themselves out of any commercial vehicle, you know, requirements, whether it be in terms of, you know, insurance or vehicle standards, even inspections. You know, they cut away at all the expenses, some which are important for consumer protection, but they cut away at them so that way, you know, they can charge drivers a higher commission. So Uber, for example, charges in San Francisco and San Diego as much as 30% off of each fare. And on average, it's from 28% to 30%.
Wow. 30%.
And, you know, throughout the country, by the way, places like Chicago, Los Angeles, they brag about having, you know, that they're cheaper per mile than even a bus. I saw a headline on, I believe it was NPR's, you know, website where the story proclaimed Uber is now faster than an ambulance. I mean, these are scary statistics. You know, it's not only to proliferate, you know, further informalization of the taxi sector, but it's very much also attempting to privatize, you know, public services.
Critical issues, the privatization issue as an economic model that would destroy full-time workers. How in New York would you like to see app-based companies are, and in this context, these Uber and Lyft actually dealt with, if we could reshape it, what really needs to be done?
Two things. I mean, one, the TNC bill must be defeated, and that the TNC model, you know, really needs to be defeated across the country.
And TNC stands for what?
A transportation network companies.
Right.
Right. So, you know, they say we transport people for hire, but we're not a taxi. You know, they say, well, you know, we're not a transportation company, we're a technology company. Mm. And, you know, those of us in transportation, knowing that they transport people for, they're dispatching for people to be transported for hire, you know, find it, you know, almost, you know, farcical, right, that they're making this claim. But really, when you go deeper into it, it's an ideological statement. You know, we know it's in reality, of course, they're transportation companies, but ideologically, they very much are simply technology companies. That's why they feel absolutely no responsibility and accountability to the drivers that are transporting people for hire or to the public that's being transported for hire. So in New York and everywhere across this country, we must defeat these state, you know, legislations calling to establish a new area of the law, specialized area of the law for TNCs. And I should add, Mimi, that that these laws not only exempt these companies from all the basic standards, you know, around insurance and background checks and trainings, but also in terms of setting the rates and prices. And that's why Uber, for example, is able to price gouge, you know, price surge or dynamic pricing, as they call it, because they look to be exempt from the area of the law that says that, you know, taxis and for hire vehicles are required to charge, quote, just and reasonable rates, or, you know, and be subject to penalties when that's violated. So, one, we want, you know, these bills must be defeated. And secondly, we must, you know, in New York City, for example, what's happened is that Uber and Lyft have filed for, you know, black car company licenses. Now, of all the sectors in New York City, and you have yellow medallions and green cabs and liveries and black cars and commuter vans, black car bases go through the least amount of, you know, requirements in order to get a base license. So it's not a coincidence that that's the license that these companies have gone after. But in fact, they're dispatching on demand. They are using a virtual meter. They don't take pre-arrangement, and they're not relying simply on corporate accounts. By all definitions, they really are a taxi and not a black car. And so there are three lawsuits at state court right now challenging that, you know, the Taxi and Limousine Commission having granted a black car license to these companies. On the other hand, if the courts rule that, in fact, these companies are, you know, can exist as black cars, then, you know, we're going to be looking to file challenges at the National Labor Board, which has ruled in the past that New York City black car drivers are, in fact, employees, and their right to organize are covered under the National Labor Relations Board. So I think that, you know, and in California, the TNCs, TNC drivers, in fact, have filed, you know, wage and hour complaints, you know, alleging that, you know, asking the courts to rule, and this is now going to be up for a jury trial, asking the courts to rule that, in fact, TNCs are very much, you know, employers, and that the TNC drivers should be protected as employees.
Wow, comprehensive and scary on a number of levels. So really, in summary, you have the lack of protections for the consumer. You have the undermining of full-time work, which also serves as a model, really, in our broader society to legitimize the continuing nature of the casualization of labor. How most critically can people in the remaining time that we have, Bedivi, support the work of the Taxi Workers Alliance in relationship to the proposed legislation in Albany and also in support of the litigation that you have just raised?
So, you know, on our website, we have a number of, you know, background materials on www.nytwa.org. You know, and I think, you know, continuing to make phone calls to state legislators and very soon also to city council members. The Taxi and Limousine Commission is doing some interesting things and beginning to regulate this sector, which we are very much in support of. We'd ask, you know, the riders to also, you know, voice their support for some of the proposed rules that the TLC has. And, you know, at the end of the day, Mimi, this is all about piecemealing labor, that very soon, if these companies succeed, drivers will no longer have a full-time job. And, in fact, you'll see on several dashboards, you know, 2, 3, 4 phones, and on each one will be a different app that's been downloaded. And you'll be expected to piecemeal fares, you know, 2 or 3 from each one of them in order to eke out a full-time living. And, by the way, where in cities and states where these companies, where the TNC model of dispatching to private plates is not legal, you know, companies like Uber tell the drivers, you know, don't worry, go ahead and pick up, we'll pay the fines. And so in East Hampton, New York right now, there are about 20 drivers who are now facing jail time, as much as 30 days in jail for illegal pickups. And, you know, the majority of the drivers are, of course, immigrants who are going to, if they're not already naturalized citizens, are going to face dire consequences, you know, for themselves and for their families in for their entire future. These companies, these CEOs, are the ones that need to be held in contempt and put, you know, have racketeering charges filed against them by the state attorney general for essentially telling poor people, working people, desperate for a living, to go out and engage in, you know, in illegal activity and claiming that they will protect them and represent them when they fully well know that they simply cannot.
Bedivi Desai, thank you for sharing all of this critical information. What happens with labor, what happens with the conditions of labor, the benefits, the wages, is strategic to all of us, and of course it has everything to do with whether or not people can continue to live in this city with its ever-escalating rents. But the issue of wages and the issues of rents really go hand in hand. Bedivi Desai, thank you for taking the time to be with us. I encourage people to go to the website of the Taxi Workers Alliance, rise to the occasion, and support full-time worker and support your own safety by so doing it. It's been great speaking with you.
Great. Thank you, Mimi.
Companies under Uber and Lyft are facing new legal troubles, this time from within. The drivers have filed a class action lawsuit saying they deserve the same benefits as employees, not as contractors. Mark New has this.
Photographer and father of three, Michael Gamora, says he was the first vetted rideshare driver ever. He now drives his own car for UberX and says the industry's fare reductions and strict rules have decreased driver profits and hurt morale.
there's this constant feeling that not only are you being monitored and scrutinized, but you're on the verge of losing your access to the platform and driving. It's not a comfortable experience.
Uber labels Gomorrah an independent contractor, meaning he does not get compensated for things like gas, mileage, depreciation, or insurance. Gomorrah says his breaking point was when Uber told drivers they had to agree not to be part of class action lawsuits against them, or they wouldn't be allowed to drive.
I've been extremely disappointed in Uber. I think they've been irresponsible in many respects. And I think this gives me an opportunity to participate in helping to correct some of these practices that are questionable.
Uber and competitor Lyft now face separate class action lawsuits brought on behalf of drivers. In both cases, federal court judges in San Francisco ruled it will be up to juries to determine whether the ride-sharing drivers are independent contractors or employees deserving of benefits. Both judges suggested that California's laws are outdated in addressing the new sharing economy.
But lead counsel on the Uber case and co-counsel on the Lyft case, Shannon Liss Reardon, says the issue is clear-cut.
That's the one point on which I respectfully disagree with both judges in these cases. There's nothing outdated about these laws. These protections have been in place over decades to protect workers. And just because some companies are coming up with the idea of having their workforce dispatched through a smartphone does not make them different from any other employers. These companies have been wildly successful, and last I've heard, Uber is valued at over $40 billion. I think a large reason why they've been so profitable is because they've just thumbed their noses at these laws that protect employees. And there's no reason why the companies need to be profiting so massively off of shifting the expenses to these workers.
As for Uber X driver Gomorrah, he's not worried about a victorious lawsuit leading to layoffs.
They're going to need as many drivers as they can to keep the balance of supply and demand, because the entire business model will collapse if you're not able to meet your demand.
Gomorrah estimates he's making 30% less than last year, and that presently, reduced fares are only benefiting the customer at the cost of the driver. Park News, CCTV, Mountain View, California.
A California court has ruled that Uber drivers have employee status within the company. The ruling is said to be a huge blow to the driving service, which had previously employed their drivers on the status of independent contractors. So what does the new ruling mean for drivers? Well, Uber might be now forced to start providing an hourly wage, health benefits, and social security to them. Currently, Uber drivers are simply paid commission for each drive given. Uber had argued that it was, quote, nothing more than a neutral technology platform that connected riders and drivers. As such, they said they were not so involved in the driver's schedule of work to consider them official employees. But the California Labor Commission decided against this claim, comparing Uber drivers to pizza deliverers who are classified as employees. The commission said Uber is, in fact, quote, involved in every aspect of the operation, from vetting drivers, their cars, to how they get business. The ruling only affects the state of California. Florida has already ruled that Uber drivers remain on employee status.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.